But to me, relationships are the crux of my existence. And when you think of it like that, it's like, oh yeah, the stakes are high.
Have you ever wished you had a wise meditation teacher on speed dial?
Someone you can call after a long day.
Someone you could lean on for their advice.
Someone to listen and help you to see things differently.
Welcome to Dear Headspace.
Hello, friends. It is time for another episode of Dear Headspace, which I am so excited about, a podcast where I sit down with a Headspace meditation teacher and we answer your questions. I'm Robin Hopkins, and today I am joined by the lovely and talented Sam Snowden. And I do love the alliteration of your name, I must say.
That's why I've kept it.
Just for me, right?
The alliteration. I mean, there's something to be said about it. It does.
Oh, it wasn't about me. It was about the alliteration. Okay, yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, I feel like before we hit record, we were talking about how we were feeling. But how are you feeling today,
yeah,
Sam?
Yeah, I'm feeling pretty good. You know, I've cut down on caffeine. So I've got my matcha green tea here, but it just doesn't, you know, I can feel a brain lag. But it's much better than like jittery anxiety. So
I'm like 2 weeks under my belt of giving up soda, which
I've done
at various points in my life. The other day, I wanted like a little caffeine pick-me-up because I didn't give up caffeine. I just gave up soda. And so I had one of those Celsius drinks, and I didn't know that it's like one of those monster power drinks. And I thought I was going to die. Like, I was just vibrating.
So it wasn't pleasant. It wasn't a pleasant experience.
I don't know. I got a lot done. I mean, I was on fire that day.
I haven't touched those. I think I had one Red Bull in high school, and I was like, oh, my brain can't handle this. So I'm going to stay away.
But Sam, I did want to say, we're going to be talking a lot about feelings today. Do you consider yourself to be an emotional person? You know, though I do have to preface it by saying I think that word has been sort of co-opted to be a pejorative, you know, especially toward women. But what do you think about that?
Well, I definitely think that I'm a highly sensitive person. And I had very big emotions as a child and still as an adult sometimes, especially around my cycle. I mean, as I get older, I feel like I'm a Jekyll and Hyde situation with my menstrual cycle. And so, yeah, but I think because I tend to be more emotional, I really appreciate rationality.
Oh, that's interesting.
You know, yeah, I seek it out. I really like hanging out with hyper-rational people that aren't that emotional. It helps ground me.
Yeah.
And the Zen Buddhist tradition is a little bit colder and more direct, more masculine, I would say, mm-hmm. than the like Mahayana or other traditions that are more heart-centered. And I've been really drawn to that for, you know, throughout my life. But then I had to do all this work with self-compassion as, you know, my 20s and still my late 30s. So it's come to a balance. But I definitely like went through periods in my life where I tried to reject emotion. There was, I think, like a 2-year period where I didn't listen to music at all because I felt like it was just too evocative. Like any music, even just shitty pop music was like too much for me. So I would listen to the sound of singing bowls. You know, like when you go to a sound bath, they just play those.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I was just listening
to that.
That's
what you were listening to.
In my car. Yeah.
In the car on a road trip. Just bong. Just that's what was happening for you.
Yeah. Yeah, that was my life.
So you were like trying not to be emotional. You were like, I'm going to ground myself.
Yeah, I just didn't want anything to evoke emotion. It's almost like, you know, you can feel that your head's right above water.
Yeah.
And if anything triggers an emotion, you're going to start to feel like you're drowning. That was that period in my life where I was like, I have to listen to NPR, I have to listen to singing bowls, and I have to go to Zen Buddhist retreats and like remind myself that death could be imminent, you know?
It's just not funny, but it's hilarious.
Yeah, it worked. It was helpful.
Well, I mean, Sam, I mean, I feel like we're all warmed up and we're ready
absolutely.
To talk about feelings, emotions, and maybe we're even going to dip our toes into self-love. I mean, we're going to see what happens today. Because our questions are about issues that arise during body scans, struggling to form close friendships, and overcoming the feeling that you're not enough. Well, these are good questions, Sam.
Mm.
It's like we just clicked up to the top of a roller coaster, and now we're at the moment of letting go. Are you ready, Sam?
I'm so ready.
Okay, let's kick this off with our very first question. Okay, here we go.
Dear Headspace, when I'm doing a body scan, I imagine a light like a copier scanning down my body from head to toe. And although this scan is in my thoughts and not a physical action, sometimes I will reach a spot on my body where the scan will get stuck and I cannot progress my scan past that spot. Does this happen to other people too? If so, what does it mean? Thank you.
Okay, I have to say this, Sam. I love this question so much because I think any kind of notes or thoughts that you get on meditation from somebody or from like a book or whatever, they're never going to delve into these little idiosyncrasies that happen to a particular person. And I have to imagine that that happens to other people.
Absolutely. I too love this question because it shows that she's really putting in the time and effort and becoming more mindful, right? Just noticing that tendency and being with it and still greeting it with curiosity.
Yeah.
We think that there's an ideal way of doing something. And then if we're falling short of that ideal, then we're doing it wrong. But
yeah,
I would say the very opposite, that this happens often. It's happened with me as well.
Do you mean like the actual copier type sensation thing or the getting stuck at a point in your body?
Happens? Getting stuck at a point in my body. Yeah, okay. I was going to back up and kind of describe what the body scan is because there's lots of ways to approach it. You can use visualization like the copy scanner image. You can imagine just kind of, you know, I remember that show. What was it called? The Magic School Bus.
Oh, yeah,
that show
yeah.
Where they shrink and they go into the body. You can imagine like a light from within kind of shining and lighting up these different parts of your body as you move through the body. But what's amazing about it is that you'll discover sensations that you didn't even know were there. You know, we can't pay attention to everything at once. We really can only pay attention to one thing at a time. And if our minds are consumed with what we have to do throughout the day and just the busyness of the day grips us in so many ways, it's easy to ignore the body and what's going on in the body.
Yeah.
So my experience with this, you know, sometimes I'll get, and I wouldn't even call it stuck. It's like my body telling me that it wants to spend more time in that area. Maybe there's some tension that's very resistant to letting go.
Yeah.
Right. And it just needs that kind of loving, open awareness to be with it, you know, until it is ready to open or it's ready to let go.
So it could be like her instincts saying, like, stay there. You're not ready to move on.
Exactly. And that would be my advice, just to stay there for as long as your body, really listening to the body, letting the body dictate the pace of your body scan.
Yeah.
And then when you are staying on one area, I like to imagine that you're breathing in and out through that area. So let's say the scanner wants to stay on my abdomen.
Right.
So I'm imagining that I'm sending my breath to the abdomen and just listening, just noticing and trying to name or mentally note sensations that are there, like tingling, tightness, fullness, whatever you notice. And then in its own time, the body will shift to the next spot.
I wouldn't say like new to body scan. Like I understand the concept. I've done some, but like you mentioned 10 minutes, 12 minutes. I think I always just was under the impression that it's a quicker process. Like when Kaysanga has referenced it for the STOP acronym, and I'm picturing I'm in, I wouldn't say crisis, but I'm at a moment where I need to halt my behavior and maybe I don't have 12 minutes. Is it always that long? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you look at like MBSR, mindfulness-based stress reduction, the body scans in the traditional sense can go, you know, past an hour. But of course, they can be adapted to whatever amount of time you have. So in the example of STOP, you're using STOP in the moment where you need to take a pause in the middle of your busy day. So the body scan would really be centered on what parts of your body are most noticeable, right? If I just almost got cut off by a car on the freeway and I do stop, of course, with eyes open, and then I observe, I'm going to be observing maybe my teeth clenched, maybe my heart rate went up, maybe I got really tight in my shoulders. So you might notice three or four spots and just mindfully, kindly, compassionately noticing what happened or what's happening, that tension tends to settle on its own, where you don't really have to do anything extra. It's just the act of kind attention and awareness is enough to let the body feel safer again, to reaffirm its safety.
Okay, so, I mean, for our callers, essentially, stay put.
Yeah.
Let it be stuck and breathe into it and just keep seeing what shows up for you. Is there anything else you would recommend for her?
Yeah, well, I actually thought of, I brought a quote in because I was thinking about this idea of how we can sometimes get too attached to techniques. You know, we do teach a lot of techniques in the app and just in the world of mindfulness because, I mean, there's a great usefulness for that in that you know you have tools and the tools need a name, right? It's like very useful and helpful to know this is a body scan and this is how I use it and this is when I can use it. But sometimes we get too attached to the outcome of the technique. We get attached to getting somewhere or accomplishing calm or accomplishing a sense of ease. And then we get rigidly attached to that and that builds resistance.
Right.
So it's important to remember that, you know, that the practice, whatever technique you're using, the practice again and again is about the relationship that you're developing with yourself. It's really about noticing when resistance or expectation or attachment arises and then going, oh, I mean, the first thing I do is greet it with compassion and just go, of course you want to feel calmer. Of course you want to be happier. Of course, you know, sweetheart or whatever term of endearment works for you. But that helps automatically just loosen some of that resistance and some of that striving to make something happen. And I just brought a quote in from the Self-Compassion Workbook by Kristen Neff. Can I read it? It's a short one?
Yeah, please.
Okay. She said, all techniques are destined to fail because whenever our practice becomes a technique designed to manipulate our moment-to-moment experience to make us feel better and make the pain go away, it becomes a hidden form of resistance.
Wow, that's really powerful.
Right?
Well, and that's just why I love questions like these, you know, about the meditation stuff, even though we talk about lots of stuff on this podcast, just because I think it's so easy to feel like you're doing it wrong, or whether it be technique or whether it be outcome or whether it be process, or you know, it's just that is in and of itself the whole thing, or at least that's what it seems like to me as a person who's trying to figure this out. It's hard and it's easy to get swept up in all that.
Yeah. Yeah. Another layer of this I was thinking about is how resistance shows up in our day-to-day life. You know, whether it's an emotion that we really don't want to feel, it's inconvenient, you know, we notice resistance to it, or we have a cold, you know, the flu, or we're sick, that same level of curiosity and openness and kindness to notice the resistance as it arises. And it's kind of like showing up for that good friend, but doing it for yourself, like letting your body and your mind let go of resistance in its own time, and you just sitting by with that kind, open, compassionate attention and that permission, giving yourself permission to feel what you're feeling.
All right, let's head into our second question.
Dear Headspace, I'm 26 years old and I've struggled with maintaining friendships with my girlfriends as an adult. I'm a super social person and I love meeting people, but I find it hard to form deeper level friendships. First, meeting someone is always easy and fun, but at some point I put up a wall and I tell myself that people don't really care to talk about what I want to talk about, so I start to avoid one-on-one hangouts. I live in Miami and a lot of people really like the city life, but I love nature and outdoor adventurous activities, so I don't feel connected to a lot of people here in that way. People think I have a lot of friends, but I would say I have just a few, and I haven't had a best friend in years. I crave deeper friendships, and I don't know what is stopping me or how to get out of my own way. I meditate daily, and I try to show up authentically to friendships, but they always end up feeling forced on my end, or like they hit a wall, and we never push past to become good friends. Any advice?
This is a really good question.
It is. It is. I have so many thoughts on it, but I'm curious. Do you relate to any part of that question, Robin?
I do, but it's a really particular part of it. I do think often if I'm the center of something, I have to kind of look at why is the wall coming up? Do you not want to be hurt? Are you stopping friendships before they become too close because you don't want to be vulnerable or intimate. Because I think friendships can be every bit as intimate as partnerships, as romantic relationships. Yeah. That's my initial thought. I mean, what do you think?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I just personally, I've been kind of the, not the opposite, but I'm very quick to get deep with people. Like I'll start asking them deep questions before we've even exchanged like our full names. You know, that's my way. I learned this a while ago about coping mechanisms. We all have ways of coping when there's social anxiety present.
Yeah.
And my way of coping is to get deep really fast because I know that's my safe space. Like I know how to be with people when they're revealing vulnerable parts of themselves, and I know how to reveal vulnerable parts of myself. So that's a place where I know how to be. For you, it sounds like humor is your safe space. You know,
yes.
You can engage that way on that wavelength. You know that like you trust your ability to find the humor in a situation. And so it's like what you fall back on when there's anxiety present. So just being aware of that. And I think coping mechanism kind of is a bad name for what it is. It's like we're designed to adjust and adapt from the moment we're born, right?
Yeah.
And so a coping mechanism is an adaptation. It's an adaptation to our environment. And I don't know anyone who doesn't have some level of social anxiety. Because, and I remind myself of this all the time, friendships and relationships are everything. They're really, to me, I mean, others may not value them as much or value other things, and that's fine. But to me, relationships are the crux of my existence. And when you think of it like that, it's like, oh yeah, the stakes are high for friendships. The stakes are high for being liked. That's like, of course it's important to you, right? Comes back to that voice of kindness within, just affirming. Of course you want a deep friendship. Of course you want a best friend.
Yeah.
That's a lovely thing to want. And there's nothing wrong with it. There's nothing needy about it. There's not, you don't have to judge yourself for wanting more friends. Just affirming that and realizing, like just getting more familiar with what your defense or coping mechanisms are. And letting go of the charge that comes with those terms, because that can get in the way of looking deeper as well.
And it's funny because I was just thinking, if this was another podcast that wasn't Dear Headspace, we might just be like laying out, you know, well, have you thought about joining groups that have like-minded, you know, you said you like to hike and you said you like outdoorsy. So maybe you do some meetups with folks who hike trails. But I mean, it's likely not about that. It's likely about the deeper underneath thing of either being afraid on some level or, you know, there's some protection mechanism that's probably happening. It sounds like, like there's a reason we do them, but you need to have choice to let the wall down, to let people in too, if you want to.
Exactly. Yeah. I think of the situation that I was in New York when I was in grad school, and I felt it was a big shift for me. And I was going to meditation groups and I was doing all the internal work. And I felt myself wanting the city to change, you know, this like irrational belief that like I could
like
will.
In what way? Like it was too loud.
It was too everything. Yeah, people weren't nice enough.
Too much.
It was too loud.
It was too Coke Zero. It was too much.
Exactly. Too caffeinated. But mostly it was about like people not initiating contact with me. I was waiting for the world to come to me, and for friendships to be forged by others toward me. Right. There was this waiting and this wanting from others.
Yeah.
I was meditating one day and this thought came to me as I was breathing in and out and following my breath. And the thought was, if you want love, give love. If you want love, give love.
Oh, that's a lovely thought.
Yeah. Yeah. And it just started to, this whole like vision of what I needed to do appeared to me. And it was like, I need to say hello. I need to like step one, say hi to people. You know, initiate. And that became my MO for the next year that I was there. I would spend extra time with baristas and just asking about their day and who they are, getting to know them. I started a study group after one of my favorite classes because I could tell we didn't have enough time to process the material. So I was like, if anyone wants to stay, we'll talk more about what we just learned. that shift in orientation to giving instead of waiting to receive was really helpful for me. And it changed the whole tone of the city.
Well, it's also like, what was your intention before your intention was leaning back and observing and judging everyone? And then you shifted your intention to like an intentional, I'm going to connect with people. And lo and behold, you connected with people.
Yeah. Yeah. And know that for some people, it can be an uphill battle to make that transition from leaning back to going forward, because it relates to our temperament. And temperament is something that is deeply ingrained in us from the moment we're born. It's very genetically influenced, you know, about 50%. And then the rest is our environment. So just to know, I say that not to say that you're stuck in your temperament like I felt I was, but to realize that for some people, it might look easy. It might look really easy for them to initiate conversations and to forge friendships. But, you know, for me and for others, it's really hard. And to be really gentle with yourself and honor your efforts. You know, at the end of a meditation, almost every time I meditate, I'll just take a few moments to say, Sam, you really did a good job today. And I'll just honor like what little efforts I made, you know?
And to our caller, like, good luck out there. It is hard and it can be lonely. But I don't know, Sam and I are out here and we are we're sending energy your way and people are coming.
Yeah,
just absolutely. Push your body first.
Absolutely.
Okay, so let's go to our last question from Robbie.
Hi, my name is Robbie. I am from Ontario, Canada. And I have a question about how to kind of combat thoughts of not feeling enough, or as I call it, not enough isms. I have a disability. I am totally blind. And there are a lot of times in my, you know, day-to-day life where I think, you know, I'm not enough, or I don't deserve to have X, Y, and Z because of my disability. And those are just thoughts that I hate, but they're there and they suck. And I was just wondering if you had any advice on how I can kind of combat them, because they're not very healthy and they take up a lot of my time and my day. And so if you had any advice, that would be greatly appreciated. Thanks so much. And love this podcast and love Headspace in general. So thank you guys so much.
Oh, thank you, Robbie. And thank you for trusting us with this, you know, thoughtful and important question.
Yeah. You know, one of the first things that came to mind was, or what stood out to me was the word combat, and how when we are hit with a barrage of thoughts that we don't want to have, it can feel like this battle is happening within us, and that he said it just right. And I've experienced this myself. Like, you feel like so much of your vital energy is being taken up by this battle.
Yeah.
So many of these automatic negative thoughts that we experience are not ones we chose to have.
Right.
And that's where there's some confusion, right? Because we start to identify with them and we start to feel like we're bad people or not worthy people because we're having them. Where it's really just an experience that's been put on your shoulders without you wanting them to. That alone, that fact alone, can really open our hearts to compassion toward ourselves. Because we know that we're not asking for this. We know we didn't do anything wrong. These are just thoughts that our brain is creating out of fear.
And I've been around you all enough to hear you talk about stories that we create about ourselves too. It feels like there's something in the, I mean, obviously Robbie has, there are facts, like Robbie has a disability, but then a story is created about what he deserves or what he doesn't deserve.
Yeah, so it's really helpful to identify a story. Sometimes the word I've started using lately is drama. My mind will create some story and I'll go, wow, that was dramatic. It's like you're, and not with like criticism, not with a tone of criticism, but you're kind of matching the tone of
like
the
an observational
with your own observational like intensity. It has to match the intensity of the thought.
Almost like you're one of the Muppet judges up in the stand, like commenting on the show that's happening.
Exactly. Exactly. So you have this inner observer. We all have it. We all have a prefrontal cortex, which gives us the ability to observe instead of react, to, you know, see what's happening within us, that what's called metacognition. the awareness of our own thoughts. And what a wonderful thing to have. But it does need to be developed as far or strengthened in most of us. So one way of strengthening that is to greet what's happening with this by, you know, the way you kind of hold your knee when you slam your knee against a table.
Yeah.
It's that same impulse to go, but it's happening in our head, right? So we can't like really touch it.
But you can't be like, ow!
Exactly. But I mean, sometimes I will do that. I'll actually just put a hand on my forehead and go, wow, that hurts. That really hurt.
Yeah.
That's kind of the first step of self-compassion is the acknowledgement of the either a ping, what I call a ping, which is like a light little difficult thought, to a bomb, which is like, wow, you just dropped a nuclear bomb in my head. That was hard. That was really hard. You know, so the tone changes depending on how intense the thought was, how difficult the thought was. So that's the first step. That's triaging the difficult experience is to notice and to say, wow, that was hard to feel.
But I think in that moment, though, don't you have to be able to, you have to be able to separate out fact from fiction in that scenario, though, right? Because otherwise, because like, how can you observe the thought if you believe the story?
That's a really good point. So, but what comes first is if we have an emotion, and this, you can think about this with parenting. If a child is having a tantrum, you don't reason with them at that point. You wait until they've calmed down.
Well, I do, but those are not my proudest parenting moments, Sam. So thank you very much.
Has it worked? I mean, has it worked okay?
No, never. Not once.
Yeah, it doesn't work. And because our brain, the connection between our prefrontal cortex and our amygdala is like temporarily severed. The communication is cut off. And so we need to, in order to reestablish that communication, which gives us the ability to access compassionate self-talk, the emotion itself has to come down. It has to resolve to a certain level. It doesn't have to go down to zero, but it does have to come down from like a 10. So step one is acknowledging the pain, acknowledging the ouch, and then exploring what is it like in your body? What was the impact on your heartbeat, on your face, on your stomach? You know, sometimes we get that tense digestion literally like slows down or halts because blood is being sent to our extremities to prepare us to run or fight. So letting your body kind of come down off that intensity as well. And then once you feel or sense that you're relatively calm or you're calmer, then you can start to work with the thought itself. So you can ask yourself, is this thought true? And then you can ask again, is this thought absolutely true? Or are there exceptions?
Yeah, that's a nice distinction.
Yeah, and it starts to break up the rigid attachment to the thought being true. And we start to see like, wait, actually, there are many reasons why I'm worthy of having friendships or I am a good person. I do good things a lot of the time.
Yeah.
You start to disprove the story or unravel the story so that you see more truth instead of the drama that's behind it.
It's almost like you're just picking apart the thread, like you're becoming a detective against yourself.
Yeah. And I like to think of it as zooming out to take in the whole picture. When we have these really difficult thoughts, we tend to get narrowly focused. And then it's like our brain will come up with a lot of evidence. Like I imagine little animals coming out of the forest to gather around the thought. It'll be like, oh, well, I can find evidence for all of that. Yeah, that is true. You don't deserve that because of this. And you didn't park, you parked in a red spot the other day. And it like comes up with all these reasons. But if you zoom out and go, okay, well, what else is true? Like, what else is true about who I am? And then the little critters come out, the little evidence monsters come out to support that story, right?
Well, and I don't know about you, Sam, or Robbie, for that matter, but I have like a greatest hits album of the things that I say to myself that are mean. It's like track one is this mean thing. Track two is this. Oh, here's the slow ballad about my weight, my looks, my success rates, my parenting. And I feel like that might be an indicator that you're in a space and you're not being logical and you're being mean to yourself because you're hitting one of those same themes that you regularly do.
Yeah, exactly. The top 10 favorite hits, right?
Exactly.
And that's so beautiful, being able to recognize that and playfully see it that way too, because it means that you're separating. You're able to separate from the automatic thoughts that your mind creates to to get a bigger picture and to observe it with the wise mind, right?
Yeah.
The part of you that knows that our brain in a lot of ways functions like a really dumb computer. It just kind of, it's programmed a certain way and then it conforms to the programming that it's been, you know, accustomed to. And then it spits out data that we
yeah.
either, that we may not like. So if we can observe that process instead of believing it right away, then we're in a really good spot.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I don't know. I always think of like that phrase of like, everything is okay as it is, like not me, you know, and that's something that I feel like I'll be striving for my entire life, because I'm always like, I'll be good when I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be happy or joyful and free when I'm here, when I'm there, versus enjoying the process and being in the moment of where you are and feeling like everything is okay just as it is.
I think there's a bigger existential component, too, that I relate to with anxiety. Like, there were times where I didn't understand why I was suffering so much, and I was really resistant to it. And I thought, I would say to myself, like, I would actually pray. I don't subscribe to any specific religion, but I would just go, please, universe, make this useful, make this suffering worth something so that maybe it helps me help someone else later.
Yeah.
And it does. But I feel like we need to trust that this is happening for other reasons, or that other people could be touched in a way that we don't even know about, right? Like maybe my story is helping someone else, and letting that soothe you to a certain extent.
Or that there'll be growth that you don't know that you can't
yes.
see right now. You
exactly.
know, because it's funny, Sam, that you said that. Like I remember my angsty 20s, I don't subscribe to a particular God or religion either. And I remember looking up the ceiling and being like, why, you know,
yeah.
and thinking that, you know, from like my childhood to, you know, just like, why, when, and thinking like, when is it my turn? When is it my turn? And that was something, oh my God, I'm getting upset. But that was something that was like deep and real, but in no way, shape or form helpful, because I was fighting. Like we've been talking about resistance this entire episode, fighting and wanting something to be different and thinking I could make it or build it or push the rock up the hill versus just releasing into it. And I am here and this is where I'm at. What can I do with this?
Yeah.
Robbie, you brought us deep, Robbie. So thank you.
Mm.
All right, Sam, that was our last question. As always, the questions were fantastic. And Sam, I love when I get the opportunity to go on this little roller coaster ride with you, because it's just, I do feel like we have an experience and we go through it and everybody's questions are exactly what we needed to hear and what we needed to talk about.
It's so true. Yeah, I look forward to this. You know, that when I see it pop up on my calendar, I'm already excited. And as I'm thinking about all the questions that were asked today, I think the courses that we have on self-compassion are incredibly helpful. And a lot of our content, if not all of our content, incorporates some level of body awareness, you know, some level of body scanning. And so getting in the habit of doing that and trying it out with different lengths and from our different teachers, so that you get a sense of all these different ways of approaching it, I think could be really helpful.
Absolutely wonderful. And just to say to everyone who's out there listening, if you have a question and you want us to answer it, it's so simple. All you have to do is head over to sayhi.chat/dearheadspace. You follow the prompts, you record your question. And if we use your question on the show, then you are going to get 3 months of Headspace for you or a loved one.
Yeah, that's awesome. And so before we leave you, we want to offer a transition from this moment to the next in your day. So we've built in some time so you can just take in what you heard. And this is really a moment to let your mind do whatever it wants to do. So today we're leaving you with the peaceful sounds of laundry. Like, I love laundry mats, so I'm really excited about this.
That's right. So till next time, stay happy, stay healthy.
And please be kind to each other.
Yes, and to yourself.
Yes.
Dear Headspace is a Headspace Studios original podcast. It's produced by Robin Hopkins, Ash Jones, and Scott Sorensen. It's executive produced by Morgan Selzer, Sarah Cohen, Baron Farmar, and Danny Christomy. It's hosted and produced by Robin Hopkins, Kesanga Giscombe, Dora Kamau, Samantha Snowden, and Eve Lewis Prieto. Sound recording and post-production is by Dan Kroll. Music is by Scott Sorensen and Chris Murguia. And a very special thanks to Colleen Lutz.